Fellow writers, I've got exciting news from Author Accelerator. Applications for Author Accelerator's new two-year scholarship program for Black, Indigenous, Latinx, or other people of color open this month. The Author Accelerator team developed this scholarship as a way to amplify diverse voices and perspectives that are underrecognized in the publishing world. The newly launched Author Accelerator Book Coach Certification Scholarship provides 1 year of professional mentorship and feedback for up to 3 students of color as they complete the Book Coach Certification Program, and 1 subsequent year of career coaching and mentorship as they launch their business. If you're interested in applying or want to learn more, the scholarship window opens November 15, 2022, and will close January 15, 2023. The program itself will kick off in March 2023. To learn more, visit bookcoaches.com/equity.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to rustle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, I'm Jess Leahy, and this is #AmWriting. This is the podcast about writing all the things, the short things, the long things, the fiction, the nonfiction, the essays, and in today's case, this is often the podcast about how we get our work out there, how we try new things, and see what works and what doesn't. As I said before, this is Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation, and I was an education and parenting journalist for a long time at the Atlantic, the Washington Post, and the New York Times. And it's just me alone today because I want to talk about creating video content to market your books, promote your books, supplant your books, be extra bonus content for your books. And we happened to get a question in the #AmWriting Facebook group, a very specific question about how to do that without cannibalizing your book's content. Now, I was in a meeting with a bunch of friends of mine talking about how things have been going with sales for The Addiction Inoculation and The Gift of Failure and what my plans are for the next year. And I expressed some frustration about the fact that while The Gift of Failure events are going fantastically well, The Gift of Failure is still selling fantastically well. I'm very, very proud of the fact that The Gift of Failure continues to sell at a similar rate to, you know, with ups and downs, obviously, to where it was kind of right after it came out, in the months after it came out. So I'm very proud of that. And again, I would point you to a book like Ryan Holiday's book, Perennial Seller. It's a book about creating a book that sort of stands the test of time and continues to sell as opposed to a book that just makes a big splash and then goes away. So anyway, that's something I'm very, very proud of. The Addiction Inoculation is tougher, and my agent and I knew it would be tougher, and my editor and I knew it would be tougher, but addiction is a really tough category to sell. The book is shelved in a weird place in bookstores. It tends to be with the parenting stuff. And just a little inside baseball here. When you write parenting stuff, it's a little frustrating sometimes about where our books get shelved, because in a lot of big bookstores and a lot of small bookstores too, the parenting shelf is in the kids department. It's like literally, at Northshire Bookstore, a bookstore I love, love, love in Manchester Center, Vermont. If you ever get a chance to go, you should. But you have to truck all the way upstairs to the floor that is dedicated to pretty much all kids stuff in order to find books for adults about parenting. If you go to Barnes & Noble, likely you're going to have to go into the kids section in order to find the parenting books. It's a little harder to just happen upon our books unless you're looking for them. And we've talked a little bit before about how books get shelved and keywords that help book retailers shelve our books. If I could get shelved in, for example, personal growth or the addiction or self-help or psychology section, that would be great. But the default is the parenting section. So given that, parents often tend to find addiction and their kids' risk of substance use disorder really scary. So while you might be perfectly happy buying a book called The Gift of Failure or How to Be a Happier Parent, KJ's book, Buying a book called The Addiction Inoculation is just scary, especially if you live in a small town and you're afraid you're going to run into someone. To that end, what I have also been finding is that parents seem to be a little less willing to come to events, speaking events, about substance use disorder or substance use prevention, because the idea is, oh my gosh, what if someone sees me there and thinks I have a problem? Or, oh my gosh, what if someone sees me there and thinks I'm worried my kid has a problem? What will people think? Above and beyond the fact that most of my messages about banishing the shame and guilt having to do with that, they couldn't possibly know that until they come to my event. My job as a speaker and as an author as well is to figure out how to get people interested so that they can find out, so they can hear me, so they can read me, so they can get the words, so they can get my message. And if I'm scaring people away before they ever come across the transom, those people are lost to me. So one of the things an author has to do is figure out, number one, how to engage sort of the target audience. And while we're at it, you know, be really creative in thinking about what our other audiences could be. For example, with The Gift of Failure, there have been a bunch of great speaking audiences that I've loved. I speak to, you know, coaches, I speak to pastors, I speak to counselors, I speak to all kinds of people that wouldn't have necessarily squarely been in the intended audience or the ideal audience or ideal reader for my book. But as I've sort of been able to play with the material, I found that it fits a lot of different contexts. And it's important to be objective about your content and figure out who really the reader is, because as we all know, the answer to the question of who might want to read this book or who's going to buy this book cannot be everyone, because that's not realistic. For me, I have to get really granular about who's going to buy this book. When you write a proposal, you have to get very granular about that. But it's always good to be very creative about possible audiences and how you can tailor your content for those potential audiences. And it's your job to show them why they might find it interesting. So on my website, it would behoove me, don't lecture me, it's not all there yet, it would behoove me to have a wide range of possible speaking engagement content that I can deploy to lots of different people. My speaking agent does that really well, so that I can, you know, make myself known to other audiences that may not have occurred to me to approach. So, for example, I get to do an event this spring at a children's museum, and I love doing museums. Those are one of my favorite audiences. I've done work with U.S. Club Soccer for coaches, and that's been just fantastic. But again, not necessarily people that I would have gone to first, but it's great to be creative about that. So while you're being creative about who might want your content, you also have to be creative about getting that content to people who might want it but are reluctant to engage, or people who may not even know they need the content. So I'm doing that two ways. Very quickly, let me gloss over the one that is not the point of this podcast today, which is to dovetail my Gift of Failure content with my addiction inoculation content. So it just so happens that many of the objectives of the Gift of Failure are, you know, creating self-efficacy in kids, helping kids self-advocate, helping kids feel like they're enough and they are seen and they deserve to take up space and they are loved. Well, P.S., a lot of that are really important points in substance use prevention in kids. We can prevent substance use in kids if we get them early intervention for academic issues, if we help them feel like they are enough, if we help them feel like they deserve to be loved and take up space in this world, and we see them and not some imaginary version of them. These things dovetail, and so it's my job that if I feel like it's really important for people to have this information about substance use prevention, that I'm getting it in there somehow. And so if I can get those Gift of Failure audiences to start thinking about what prevents substance use in kids, even if they didn't intend to come to a meeting about substance use prevention in kids, all the better for them, all the better for their kids, all the better for my book sales, and frankly, all the better for them inviting me back maybe in a year or two to talk about substance use prevention. So that's been one way that I've done that. But then, as I said, I was in a meeting with some of my friends and we were talking about career stuff and we were talking about things we were frustrated by and things that were working well. And I expressed my frustration over, you know, my speaking events being a lot less than I would like about substance use prevention. And I'm at the place now, the paperback has been out for 6 months, where I have been at this long enough that I'm to a place now where I think it's more important for me to get the information out in by any means necessary than to worry about cannibalizing my content. And here's why. I expressed that worry in this meeting because what happened was I expressed my frustration and a friend of mine said, you know, Jess, if people are afraid to come to those events because they are afraid that they're going to be seen or what people will think, blah, 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 maybe you should just deliver it by video. I mean, why don't you use TikTok? Why don't you use Instagram? Why don't you do some video content that gets that information out and just not worry about cannibalizing your content or giving the milk away for free? And she quoted James Clear and Dan Pink, who both say, if people are interested in your stuff, they're gonna want more. So given that, I came home from my meeting with these friends of mine and that very next day made my first video. So what? So today what I'd like to talk about is what I've learned from that video. I wanna answer the question that came up in the Facebook group about cannibalizing content and the worries around that, which, you know, there's some things to worry about. And essentially give you sort of a download of what I've learned about doing video content. And believe me, I'm still learning. There's so much. Okay, so I had to figure out where is this content going to go? Well, this content ideally will go both on Instagram Reels, which are really suited to video, and TikTok. So TikTok will allow me to do all kinds of video lengths, but I found out very quickly something I didn't know that Instagram does not. Instagram Reels allows you 90 seconds. What I also found out the hard way after making a couple of those 90-second videos, and yes, it's very hard to create 90-second videos because that's short. I also found out that the captions function on Instagram, and I love the way they look. They're just pretty. They max out at a certain number of characters. So all of a sudden, my videos would come to an end on, or, you know, would get towards the end on Instagram, and suddenly there'd be no more captions. And there wasn't anything I could do to fix that. And it created a situation in which I was taking things down and putting things back up. You also can't see that it's not going to show the captions until you actually post it. They look like they're there on Instagram until it actually goes up. It's very frustrating. Again, hopefully this is flattening the learning curve for some other people. So that's when I realized I was going to have to actually invest in software that would let me do captions in a way I wanted to. I also wanted to be able to watermark my video. So I'll get to that in a second. Okay, so do I want to create a 90-second video for Instagram and then be able to take advantage of the longer times on TikTok? Absolutely not. What I have found out after I have gone through, at this point, I've recorded 63 videos. They have been nearly every day. Out of necessity, I've had to skip, I think, 2, maybe 3 days since I started. It is a huge time suck. This needs to be something you enjoy or something that is going to be worth it for you. I do enjoy it, and I've come out with some hacks that make it less of a time suck. But if you're doing this simply to sell books, I'm not 100% sold yet. And again, I'll get to why in a minute. So here's what my routine looks like. Here's really inside baseball. I go into my closet and get like 10 different shirts that are easy to throw off and on. I do, for the purposes of video, I have 2 really good lights. The better your light, the better your quality. If you have less light, the videos actually look lower quality. So make sure, it may look really bright to you, but make sure you're really well lit, which is a problem for me because Behind me on the wall I use for these videos, there's this thing that reflects, and that's been a pain for me. And if I had to do it all over again, I probably would not put my everyday calendar right behind me with a glass front on it because it will reflect everything. For the first week or so, let me start at the beginning again. So 10 shirts. Why do I do 10 shirts? Is it just because I want people to think I'm actually doing these videos every day? Well, sure. But it's also because, and I found this out the hard way, if I am wearing the same thing in every video and I'm trying, there are going to be a lot of stops and starts. In the beginning, I found I had to try to record the video at least 10 times in order to get one clean version. So imagine what's going to happen. If you're not individually deleting each false start, you're going to have at least 10 versions of each video. Some are really easy to tell and you can delete them because they're only 8 seconds long or 12 seconds long or whatever. But you might just end up having multiple versions that are about 90 seconds. And if you're wearing the same thing in each one, you're going to have to listen to each one to know which is which. So having a slightly different outfit in each one has been very helpful for me for, you know, just keeping track. Oh, tomorrow's is the one with the blue shirt and yesterday's was the one with the red shirt. Because the other thing that happens is as you edit them for your captions and your watermark, and for me, I'm on a Mac, and so they end up going back in iPhoto, which, again, I'll get back to in a second. It can sometimes shuffle the order because depending on how they download. So that's a mess, too. So having a different outfit, a different shirt, at least, because you don't see my legs, is very, very helpful. Okay, so I have 10 shirts over the back of a chair in my office. I have my lights, and that's working well. I have adjusted the lights so that they are least reflective. I have closed the blinds in my office so that there are no squirrels for the dogs to see. I have made sure the dogs are content and laying down. I have closed the office door and put my soundproof curtains or sound dampening curtains. I've closed them. And I'm ready to go. And then inevitably, by the way, the UPS truck will come or something horrible will happen. Okay, so the other thing I do is I have a little tripod for my phone, but what I found that works best actually is I have removed my Blue Yeti microphone from its stand and it's on a boom that comes over my table. But the stand for the Blue Yeti mic, when you take the little screws out of the side, is the perfect width to hold your phone. The other thing I like about it is that sometimes I will use a piece of paper, a small piece of paper, as just a really bare bones outline for what I want to say. Not necessarily because I'm going to need to look at it, but for me, writing this down makes me feel more secure. So I can use the edges of the microphone holder to hold on to folded edges of the paper, or sometimes I just tape it and put it just below the camera. So I can't see myself, but I can hit record at the bottom or stop at the bottom and the camera is not blocked. So it's the camera, a piece of paper with my points on it. So it looks a little less obvious. It's more like a teleprompter. So my eyes don't stray way over to the side in case I need to look at notes, and the stop and start bottom at the bottom. Okay. So that's the basic idea there. I have to admit, do my hair and put makeup on just so that I don't look so sallow. I have come to terms, I hate makeup, but I've come to terms with the fact that if I'm on stage and I'm being lit, or if I'm on camera and I'm being lit, it would behoove me to even out my face, whether that's because I have dark circles or because I have, you know, uneven redness or whatever. I just use some basic makeup just to even out my features. One last thing, my teeth are not perfectly straight. So in some videos, you may notice that when I'm not paying attention, it looks like I'm missing a tooth on the left-hand side of my face or on my left-hand side. If I'm careful and I light myself well, that is less obvious. I learned that from doing a documentary in which, to my horror, they lit me from the wrong side. It was my bad side in terms of the camera angle. And in the documentary, it looks like I am missing a tooth. So that's just something you learn over time. And, you know, it doesn't bother me. I'm not going at running out and getting braces or anything. But I do know that if I put... I did have braces, by the way. I just didn't wear my retainers. And I found out from someone recently, your teeth continue to shift and move as you get older. So there we are. My teeth aren't straight whatever. I'm an imperfect person. But I do know that I can make that look a little better if I do have some light on that side. So just start to notice those things about yourself. But I'm not putting on makeup every day. So that's why I shoot 10 of these at a time, or however many I can get out at a time, because it's a pain in the butt and it reduces the time sink. Okay, all that stuff's ready. I put on my first shirt. I've got my notes up on the camera. And yeah, it's still going to take me probably 10 whacks at it to get it just right, to get the timing right. I try to keep an eye on the timer on my phone because that helps me. I also have to keep account of the fact that, like, in the beginning, I have to take a deep breath and there's a few seconds at the beginning that I can cut. There are ways, if you go over time and it's a perfect video, that you can speed it up a tiny bit. But I just don't want to do that. I want to get it in one go. That usually takes me now about 4 tries, but originally at least 10. Be patient with yourself. It's totally cool. This is new, okay? So I record a 90-second video. Then I use a program called Mix Captions. I upload the video, which for me would be sitting in iPhotos on my Mac. I upload it to Mix Captions. It's not expensive. And from my perspective, after trying a couple, it seems to work best. For me, anyway. I get the captions going in Mix Captions. I correct the captions because, yes, you will have to correct your captions. It does like to insert capitals and commas in weird places, gets my name wrong every time. So I go through those, I correct my captions, and then I move the captions so they're up near my chin as opposed to down at the bottom. I found out the hard way, thank you, Serena Bowen, that if you put a caption video up on TikTok, it will overwrite, no one will be able to see your captions if they're all the way at the bottom of the screen. So bring them up to just under your chin. That seems to work well for me. I also wanted the cover of my book in there because I'm talking about the addiction inoculation. So I have it down in the corner. It has learned that I like that, and it automatically puts that photo at the top of the video every time, and I just have to drag it down. Okay, so once my captions are done, once my watermark is on there, the picture of the book, I then export it out to a file in Dropbox, and I call them TAI, and then for the addiction inoculation, the number of the video and captioned after. And then I delete the original in iPhotos. If you don't want to delete the original and you like to keep all of the stages, that's you. You do you. I delete the original, so all I have is the finished version with the captions in iPhoto and in that file marked TAI number, episode number, captioned. There's a reason for this, believe me. So the very first place I put the video is on Instagram Reels. I would like people to view it on Instagram. That would be my choice. So what I do after I have uploaded it to both Instagram Reels and as a post, Serena taught me how to do it. You go over to your profile, you make sure it is set in the middle of the screen, not on posts, but on Reels. And then you hit plus for new, and it asks if you want to do a reel or a post or a whatever. I say reel, and then don't worry about the post thing, because at the very end it'll say, oh, do you want to simultaneously do this as a post? And I keep that checked, and so cool, it posts. Then I go into the post, not the reel, but the post, and I share it from there. So I share it. I take the caption without all of the hashtags I have used for TikTok. And yes, I'll talk about hashtags. This may have to be 2 episodes. We'll see. I strip off the hashtags, just do the original descriptor for the video. I put that on my clipboard, hit, Control C for copy. I share to Facebook, both my professional page and my personal thing and my work thing. Facebook, professional and personal. To LinkedIn. Yes, folks, I'm using LinkedIn. And guess what? I've gotten 4 speaking opportunities from LinkedIn. Never thought I would say that in a million years. And then I also share it to Twitter, obviously without the hashtags. Then I go to TikTok. I upload it to TikTok by hitting the little plus at the bottom. And I use the same caption that I used in Instagram. So paste it there and then add slightly different hashtags for TikTok. TikTok is the Wild West. There's so much going against me in TikTok. They censor a lot of content around drugs and alcohol. So I can't not say those words. So it's always going to be in my captions. It's always going to be in what I'm saying. I'm just trying to cope with it. I mean, short of me coming up with a word other than drugs that I always use, or a word like, you know, you can't use the word sex on there. You can't use the word die or suicide. You have to use words like unalive and eggs instead of sex, or corn instead of porn, whatever. I guess if I were smart, what I would do, and maybe I'll try this with the next one, I would come up with words that aren't drugs, aren't alcohol, aren't, I don't know, all the words that make TikTok unhappy. I try not to use them, but whatever, they end up in there. For hashtags, I use things like parenting and kids and teens and substance use disorder and stuff like that. There isn't even a hashtag for drugs, if that's any indication of how upset they are about those things. And then I upload it to TikTok. Okay, that's the basic workflow. Takes me forever. What I have noticed over time is the Instagram is going pretty well. When I tag people in them, like for example, if I hold up someone else's book, I held up Lisa Damore's book in one of the videos, and Lisa's got a really solid following, and that upped my numbers just by tagging Lisa. Do not do this willy-nilly. Do not go tagging people that don't need to be tagged in your videos. That's just annoying and manipulative and an abuse of your power. Don't do that. Hashtag power, don't abuse it. Although it does work great. So, but only use it if you're really truly doing it for the right reasons and because you think it'll be helpful, or you need to let them know they've been tagged in your video or whatever. So I don't have a lot more to say about Instagram. I will say though, I have observed a lot about TikTok. The numbers on Instagram are better than my numbers on TikTok, which isn't surprising. I don't have much of a following on TikTok. I started out at, you know, even before I posted anything, I had about 98, I think, like, you know, friends and family who followed me on TikTok. Now I have almost 1,000, I think, maybe like 900 or something like that. It's not going like gangbusters. I'm definitely not going viral over there. I don't know how much it's because my content is working against me. What I do know is one handy little thing that Serena told me. I mean, what would we do without Serena, frankly? She said she'd heard from a book talker that your video will get pushed out more toward the hashtags that you would like it to get pushed out to if you're actually watching content within generated by those hashtags. So I tried an experiment. I went to hashtag parenting and I just watched / scrolled through a lot of parenting content. And lo and behold, the next day, my views doubled. It went from, I don't know, 500 to like 1,200 or something like that. I just don't have the energy to be fake scrolling on all of my hashtags. So I don't know how often I'm going to do that. Maybe I'll do it if I feel like there's a really important video that I'm hoping can get some traction. But that seems like a lot of stupid work to get some views. So I don't know that that's worth my time. The return on my investment does not seem great for that. But that's a helpful piece of information. It's going to show up in more people's feeds if you are actually engaged in the content areas that you are trying to engage in. I think that's very helpful information. What else? What else would I do? Someone told me that I really need to be encouraging people to hit like and subscribe. I haven't been doing that mainly because 90 seconds is really short and it's hard to get everything in there anyway. So adding one more thing seems to be the kiss of death for me. I end up getting a really good clean recording, but I've gone just enough over that it's not usable for me. Having the same background and my face in the same place has been a really good idea. There's a lot of consistency across my feed. I like that. Word of mouth has been massive. I try to mention it in podcasts. I try to mention it in interviews. It's been a lot of work. I would do it over again. I hope this is helpful for you in case you do want to try video content. And please, if you find things that are useful for you, please come to the hashtag AmWriting Facebook group and share that with everybody. But now I want to answer the very specific question I got from someone on video content and cannibalizing your book. Your agent and your editor, when you have your first book coming out, are going to tell you, do not write articles that cannibalize your book. Do not do anything that's going to cannibalize your book content. And before your book comes out, that makes a lot of sense. I just stayed away from it. I also didn't want to plagiarize myself. I was really scared of that. So I stayed away from ever cannibalizing my content. Plus, I wanted people to hire me to speak, and I can't expect them to do that if they can just get all of my content for free, right? So then I get this quote from the Dan Pink and James Clear advice that if people are interested in your stuff, they're going to want more. And I thought about that, and I'm like, man, that is true. There are certain content creators out there that no matter how much they create, I would probably consume it. And I would probably also buy their book. Here and there, I'd say, oh, I've heard that before. But it's not like I'm recording their content in my head and know that they've restated themselves on a couple of things. You know, we say things differently. Sometimes things hit differently when I'm in a different place in my life. So if I heard something a year ago, it might hit differently for me now. I'm not as worried about that. You may have to allay some fears. You know, your editor and your agent may be really, really worried about that. But this book has been out, The Addiction Inoculation has been out for a year and a half. And at this point, as I said, what's most important to me now is this content. I have said this before. I feel like The Addiction Inoculation was the book I was born to write. It is what has made a lot of what I've had to go through with my own addiction and recovery and growing up in a home with addiction. A lot of that has been made worth it because of this book, and I get a lot of emails from people in response to this book and in response to me telling my story and being honest and open and real and true with them, and I can't discount that. There are people in recovery now who weren't in recovery before I started sharing this information. So if I sell books, that's fantastic. If I get the information out there, I think for me right now, that's most important. As a side note, I have been watching BookScan through the author portal on Amazon, and my book sales here and there go up. So is it working overall? There's a little bit of an upward trend. So great. I'm thrilled by that. But more than anything else, I need parents to get this information. I need educators to get this information because this is really important for kids to prevent substance use in kids. So at a certain point, yes, when your book is about to come out, don't cannibalize the material. Don't steal from yourself. Use all of that material. Make it bonus material. Make it, you know, anything you have that gets people in through the door and gets people to buy your book is fantastic. Once your book has been out for a while, and especially if it's a book like mine that has sort of got out there, did pretty well in the beginning and then cooled off, I'm going to do anything I need to do in order to get people interested in this topic and buying this book and listening. So that's my answer to that question. When it comes to individual, you know, bits and pieces, that you're just going to have to make decisions about that for yourself. I guess throwing away a big headline that could be a big viral article, obviously that wouldn't be smart to do. But at this point, like I said, the material is what's important to me and getting it out there. So I hope this has been helpful. As always, you know, that's always been our goal with this podcast. Every single year, KJ and Serena and I meet for our office party and say, do we want to do this again next year? Every single year we ask ourselves that question and we say, you know, my answer has always been, if I feel like people are getting important information from us, if it's helping people, and if we're still having fun, we will continue to do it. So here we are continuing to do it. And I hope this has been helpful. Again, please feel free to go to the hashtag AmWriting Facebook page. I'm such a bad publicist for myself. The videos are available at my Instagram account, which is at Teacher Leahy. There is a Jess Leahy on Instagram, and she won't give me her handle. But I'm at Jess Leahy everywhere else, including TikTok and Twitter. And if it exists tomorrow, I'll still be at Jess Leahy on Twitter. So find me there, find the videos there, tell your friends about them, hit like, hit subscribe. Apparently that really helps get things into the People's For You page. I do have the hashtag FYP because rumor has it that helps, but I don't know that it's helped me, but I'll keep sticking it on there. Anyway, thank you guys so much for giving us the inspiration for all of the stuff that we talk about. And until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Kids, this is KJ with a question. Do you own In Her Boots yet? Have you read it yourself or given it to a friend who'd love a fun story about figuring out who you are as opposed to who you think everyone wants you to be? One that also delivers a literary hoax, farm life, and an ex who can't seem to find the exit. If you don't have it on the shelf yet, now is the time. I'm asking you to head out and grab a copy at bookstores everywhere.